Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show for you today. My guest is Jeffrey Smith, the author of Seeds of Deception and the producer of the film Genetic Roulette, The Gamble of Our Lives. And I'm so thrilled to have Jeffrey on with us today. Actually, he was scheduled to be on our show back during the week of Hurricane Sandy and got canceled, and it's been this long since I've been able to reschedule him, and I'm so excited to have him here, and I'll tell you more about the work that he does in just a little bit. But before I do, I want to share with you some of the things going on in and around New York and also some things that I've been involved in. Last night, I actually went to my first Citizens Climate Lobby workshop, and they just started a new chapter of Citizens Climate Lobby here in Queens and Western Nassau. And Citizens Climate Lobby is working towards the environment in such a way that they are trying to promote and pass legislation that would give a carbon fee to companies that are dealing with fossil fuels and releasing greenhouse gas emissions into the environment. However, they will also then give back a dividend to consumers in a rebate check so that any of the increased costs that are being passed on to individuals would come back to them in a dividend rebate check. And it was really an interesting meeting. It's an interesting approach to dealing with climate change, and where they partner very often with, like, Bill McKibben, 350.org, they are really just focused on two different things. They're focused on this carbon tax fee and dividend, and they're focused on empowering individuals to take action. And, you know, I'm really very hopeful that this organization can prosper and expand and encourage and empower more and more people to get involved in this. It's going to take a lot of work on the part of constituents and individuals to rally together to put pressure on our elected officials to make climate change a priority. I mean, our president says that climate change is a priority, and yet he promotes fracking and the release of methane into the environment. So there's really a disconnect there, and we really need to help bring this into focus. And so Citizen Climate Lobby is really doing quite a bit to do that. And they're actually also having this weekend on April 26th, they're having another meeting in Brooklyn from 1 to 4. On St. John's Place, 315 St. John's Place, from 1 to 4. And it's a market-based solution to climate change and how citizens can make it happen. So if you're available this weekend, although I know this is a really busy weekend, wait till you hear some of the things going on. It's going to be really hard to choose, but it's a great organization. So look out for them, Citizens Climate Lobby. Today and tomorrow at the New School, there's a social research conference. It's a free conference, and it's called Climate Change Demands We Change, Why Aren't We? And it's they're going to have lots of speakers, a great lineup. And again, it's the conversation of climate change. Climate change is the most important thing that we're dealing with. I mean, genetically modified foods, as you'll be hearing later on in the show, is a very, very important issue. But if our planet is not here, all of that will not matter. So it's really, really important that we get climate change under control and that people start making changes in their life, and we need to do it also through legislation. So we all need to get involved in that. April 25th and 26th is also the third annual book fair. That's taking place in Williamsburg at the Wyeth Hotel. So you can look up the third annual book fair to find out more information about that. Prices really vary from free to $225 for the whole weekend pass. So And I think most of the events are like $15, so check that out. Also this weekend, April 26th, is the screening at the Walter School of Garden City of Genetic Roulette, The Gamble of Our Lives. That's Jeffrey Smith's award-winning film. And it is really a great one. And actually, right now, we have two bills that have been introduced into the New York legislature. One is the Assembly Bill A3525, and the other one is the Senate Bill S3835. And both of them are for requiring mandatory labeling of genetically engineered foods. Right now, the bill is stuck in the Consumer Affairs Protection Committee, and we need your help getting the ball rolling. So if you can, go onto my website, and I have phone numbers of the people in the Consumer Affairs and Protection Committee that you can call, the legislators and one senator, and try to encourage them to support the GMO bill, labeling bill. Okay? Also, April 26th and 27th, this weekend, is the New York City Green Festival taking place at Pier 94 all day long. Lots of different events going on. Speakers, music, entertainment, samples of food, food cooking demos. That should be a really fun event. So you can check that out. May 1st, this is a new one for me. There's a film called Taking Back Your Power about the dangers of smart meters. And smart meters are something that is, I have not heard a lot about, but I'm sure we will start hearing more and more about. They're a meter that that I know our gas companies and oil companies are trying to put onto our houses that will be able to detect how much oil or gas we're using. I guess gas more, gas and electric more than oil. And they won't be able to, won't have to come to the house to read the meter. However, it's just going to be transmitting more radioactive waves into our homes, and you know, there's lots of dangers associated with that. So if you're interested, there's a screening of that film on Long Island at the South Huntington Public Library, but I'm sure there's screenings all around the country. So look for that film called Take Back Your Power. You might even be able to find it online and find out about the dangers of the smart meter so that you can stay informed. The biggest thing here is for us all to stay informed. New things come out all the time, and they're being sold to us, and very often we're not getting the complete information. So it's really important for us all to be empowered. We have the use of the Internet. Use it, you know, for good, to really inform yourself. Saturday, May 3rd, Dr. Brian Clement, the co-director of the Hippocrates Institute, will be up here on Long Island giving a talk at the Marriott Residence Inn from 6 to 10. That's May 3rd. The workshop's called Optimum Health and Wellness, so check that out. Riverkeeper, great organization working to clean the Hudson River. They're having a cleanup on May 10th. You can find out more information at the Riverkeeper website. May 10th through 11th, the Edible Communities, those wonderful magazines that we all love, called Edible Brooklyn, Edible New York, Edible East End. Now we also have an Edible Long Island. They are having an Edible Institute 2014. That's going to be taking place at the New School in Manhattan from May 10th and 11th. You can find out more on their website. Michael Pollan will be speaking at the 92nd Street Y on May 13th at 8 o'clock. And loads more events, so you can find out about them on my website at ieatgreen.com. I want to share with you a recipe. This week I am sharing with you my recipe for almond milk. It's very easy to make almond milk, and if you look at the commercially sold almond milks that are in the supermarket, almost all of them contain a carcinogen called carrageenan. And even though carrageenan is made from seaweed, it has been found to be carcinogenic and to cause problems in the intestines. So if you can make your own almond milk, it's so easy. However, I will tell you that it goes bad much quicker. I mean, you know, 4 days it's good, but then the fifth day it starts getting funky. So don't make too much at a time. I just make a cup of raw almonds, and I soak them overnight in water. You want to mix that with 3 cups of water, 2 to 3 dates, a half a teaspoon of vanilla, and just a dash of salt. And so you soak the almonds overnight, And then in the morning, you drain that liquid out, put the almonds into a blender or a Vitamix, add the 3 cups of water, the dates, the vanilla, and just a pinch of salt. And you blend it at high speed for a few minutes. I mean, turn it on, turn it off. Really blend it very, very well. And then you can either get an almond milk bag, which I have invested in. I've got mine at Whole Foods. Or you can just use cheesecloth. And you double the cheesecloth over a container. I have a glass carafe that I use. And you pour the almond milk mixture through the cheesecloth. And you let it drain. And then after most of the liquid's gone through, you squeeze it really, really hard and get the remaining liquid out of it. Then you're going to dump that out. It's not going to be able to be done in one batch. You're going to have to strain a little bit, squeeze it out, dump the pulp, and then do it again. And do it until all the almond milk is squeezed through into the carafe. And that's it. It's so easy, and it's so delicious. And I recommend doing it. And it's really fun. You know, I have all these different things going on in my kitchen. I make the almond milk. I'm now doing the wheatgrass. And it just becomes a rhythm. You just add it to your schedule. And it's quite simple. But it's really the best almond milk you're going to get. The commercially bought ones, if you look at the ingredients, there's way too many ingredients. As you can see, all you need is almonds and water, something if you want it to be a little sweet, like the dates and the vanilla. That's it. So try out the recipe. Let me know. Give me some feedback. I always love to hear from all of you. And now, without any more delay, I want to introduce Jeffrey Smith to all of you. Jeffrey is a leading consumer advocate for healthy non-GMO choices, and he's an expert in the dangers of genetically modified foods. And his research has documented how the biotech companies continue to mislead not only legislators but also consumers and ignore the health dangers from genetically modified foods and also the damage that it's doing to the environment. So his movie, which as I mentioned is screening this Saturday at the Waldorf School, called Genetic Roulette, The Gamble of Our Lives, really links the genetically modified foods to so many of the new allergies and health issues that people are having, including infertility, digestive disorders. You know, when you think about it, people used to eat peanut butter. People used to eat bread. Now there's so many allergies, asthma's, you know, skyrocketing, obesity skyrocketing, so many things that you can really link to the connection of when genetically modified ingredients started really entering our food system. His book, Seeds of Deception, Exposing Industry and Government Lies About the Safety of Genetically Engineered Foods You're Eating, is the world's bestseller on GMOs and really is the primer for the health dangers of genetically modified foods. He's also the founding executive director of the Institute for Responsible Technology, which, by the way, I have to tell you, is a great, great website. You can find out so much information there. And it's the leading source for GMO health risk information for consumers, policymakers, healthcare professionals, et cetera. The Institute for Responsible Technology's educational programs are wonderful. I have used them in PowerPoint presentations. They're really clear, precise, and I really recommend people checking them out. So, Jeffrey, are you with me? Hello, everybody. We had a little conflict with our interview timing, but Jeffrey is just about with us.
Here.
So.
I'm here right now.
Yay! Hello,
Hooray.
Jeff. How are you?
Great. Great to be here.
great. I told everybody that I had originally scheduled you back during Hurricane Sandy. I don't know if you remember, but
we
got canceled, and it's been a long time waiting, so I'm really thrilled to have you with us. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
So can you share with everyone, before we get started into the specifics of genetically engineered foods, can you share with us your background and how you first became aware of the dangers in genetically modified foods?
I learned it from a scientist, and I've been studying from the scientists ever since, and that was 18 years ago. I went to a lecture by a genetic engineer, and he was intimately aware that the technology which was about to be deployed in our food supply was totally inappropriate, was extremely dangerous, and could easily cause serious health issues. Furthermore, the technology would affect all living beings and all future generations because it's leaky. In other words, you plant a GM crop over here, it can then cross-pollinate with the similar crop next door, with wild relatives next door, the seeds can blow, and it becomes a permanent part of the ecosystem for all future generations. We essentially contaminate the gene pool. And this was alarming to this scientist and to scientists around the world, and yet the biotech industry, most prominently Monsanto, had been able to convince regulators to accept this technology without any required safety studies. So it was really an incredible mismatch between the danger of the technology and the way it was being treated by government and by big corporations.
Mm-hmm. And prior to this, my understanding is that life was not allowed to be patented. However, somehow Monsanto convinced judges that their seeds were able to be patented.
Well, it's interesting. The genetic engineering was able to get a patent in the 70s from the Supreme Court, and it was based for bacteria, but the bacteria never was commercialized. But then the Monsanto used that to introduce their seeds, and in one case there was a very important ruling by the Supreme Court in favor of Monsanto, written by a judge who rarely writes any opinions. That's Clarence Thomas, and he wrote the majority opinion, and it turns out he used to work for Monsanto as their attorney, which was extremely convenient. And we have a situation where they convince the patent office that GMOs are unique and different, and they convince the FDA that GMOs are completely the same, so they don't even have to be tested or labeled. So, and to one regulatory agency, they say one thing. To another, they say something entirely different. They tell us that GMOs are safe and not really different, and yet the FDA scientists repeatedly warned that GMOs were different and dangerous and could lead to allergies, toxins, new diseases, and nutritional problems. But the person in charge of FDA policy was Monsanto's former attorney, Michael Taylor, who ignored and even denied the existence of this overwhelming consensus of concern by the scientists working at the agency, and said, since GMOs are not really different, no testing or labeling is necessary. Taylor then went on to become Monsanto's vice president, and now he's back at the FDA as the U.S. food safety czar.
I know. That's one of the most bizarre things, is how you hear about the revolving door and how blatantly illegal it should be. I mean, it's just...
Oh, yeah. I mean, talk about conflict
of interest.
Here's another conflict of interest. The FDA is mandated to promote biotechnology. It's one of their explicit instructions that they brag about. Now, they're supposed to promote it and theoretically regulate it. So instead of regulating it, they've abdicated it. So we have a situation where the FDA never actually approves a GMO. They simply allow companies like Monsanto, who told us that Agent Orange, PCBs, and DDT were safe, to determine on their own that the GMOs were safe, and hopefully they'll get it right this time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have analyzed the way that companies like Monsanto do their supposed safety research, and it is basically a sham. It is tobacco science. They have rigged their research to avoid finding problems, and even with that rigging, we see organ damage, potentially precancerous cell growth and digestive tracts. We see immune system problems. We see extremely high rates of infant mortality, not only in Monsanto's study, but in the handful of independent studies that have been done. In fact, when the American Academy of Environmental Medicine reviewed the animal feeding studies, they said, there's causal evidence here. This is not casual. There is gastrointestinal disorders, immune system problems, reproductive problems, organ damage, dysfunctional regulation of cholesterol and insulin, accelerated aging. They named all of these and said every doctor in America should prescribe non-GMO diets to every patient, mm-hmm. and now thousands, in fact, are doing just that.
The interesting thing also is not only if you avoid GMO foods yourself, but you also, there's GMO contamination that you can have secondhand, like the same way you had secondhand smoke. You have secondhand GMO contamination by eating animals that are fed genetically modified foods.
I've never heard anyone make that excellent analogy, secondhand smoke and contamination. I think that is brilliant. I'm going to steal that one.
You may.
That was great.
You may. Now, a lot of times people say to me, you know, there's been genetic crossbreeding for years, you know, to get a better tomato or a pest-resistant carrots. Can you explain to people who are listening what is the difference between crossbreeding to make a drought-resistant lettuce, per se, as opposed to a genetically modified fruit?
Well, in the first case, we're talking about sexual reproduction, okay? So you have a mom-and-pop corn, a mom-and-pop pig, a mom-and-pop anything, and they breed, and then the genes get mixed up and spread out, and now you have offspring that have some genes from the mom, some genes from the dad. And they apply that to agriculture, and they apply that to animal husbandry. Now, this is what happens with genetic engineering. Let's say you want to turn a corn plant into an insecticide, and they do. They take a gene from soil bacteria that produces its own natural toxic insecticide that breaks open the stomach of insects to kill them. Now they take that gene and make millions of copies and put it into a gun, shoot from that gene gun into a plate of millions of cells, then clone the cells into a plant so every single cell of that new plant has a gene-sized spray bottle that produces an insecticide to kill insects. Now, that's a lot of things in there with the laboratory, but it's not sex. It's not the traditional method of creating offspring. They mix and match genes between species and between kingdoms. The process itself, whether inserted by a gene gun or bacterial infection, followed by cloning, creates massive collateral damage in the DNA. Up to 5% of the naturally functioning genes can dramatically change their levels of expression. Genes can be shut off, turned on, new allergens or toxins can be introduced. And almost none of these problems are evaluated before the GMO gets on the market. So the technique itself is dangerous, not to mention the fact that we now have corn that produces an insecticide, and that insecticide was found 2 years ago to poke holes in human cells. And it was found in the blood of pregnant women and their unborn fetuses, and it was found also to damage blood cells in animal studies. So we have the potential for causing massive gastrointestinal disorders, leaky gut, blood problems, and basic problems in the fetus from the corn we're eating, based on the fact that it was introduced without testing, based on assumptions that we now know are false.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's basically two different types, my understanding anyways, two different types of genetically modified processes, right? There's one that's Roundup Ready soy, and then the BT corn. Can you explain the differences?
Well, most of the GMOs are what's called herbicide tolerant. They're sold as a package. You get the seeds, you get the weed killer, and the plants that grow from the genetically engineered seeds will not die from that particular weed killer. Most of the popular variety is the Roundup Ready variety. You have Roundup Ready soy, mm-hmm. you have Roundup Ready corn, cotton, canola, sugar beets, alfalfa, and all of them constitute the vast majority, about 85%, of the GMOs in the world. Now, we spray Roundup on the Roundup Ready crops. The Roundup gets absorbed into the crops, and ends up in the food that we eat. Now, Monsanto had claimed falsely for years that GMOs were safe. A recent paper linked Roundup, their and its active ingredient, to heart disease, cancer, obesity, diabetes, multiple sclerosis, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, autism, aggression, depression, digestive disorders, and infertility. Now it's more recently linked to gluten disorders and kidney failure. It's also linked to birth defects. It messes up the gut bacteria. It can bind with minerals, making them unavailable for absorption. It helps block the detox pathways of the body, so other toxins we're exposed to in the environment can be amplified dramatically. It turns out, according to some scientists, to be the most chronically toxic chemical on the planet, given how powerfully damaging it is over time and how much it is used and found now in the environment. That's the major area of GMOs. The next is the pesticide-producing crop, like the corn we just discussed. The toxin that it's producing is called BT toxin. And the BT toxin has been found to cause allergic-type reactions in humans and animals, as well as to poke holes in the cell walls of humans and animals. And so we have a situation now, we have an allergen and a hole-poking toxin in the corn that we're eating. Now, the only human feeding study ever conducted on the commercialized GMOs found that the genes that we eat that have been transferred into these crops can transfer from the crops and the food in our guts into the DNA of the bacteria that's present in our intestines.
And it keeps producing, right? Keeps producing
possible.
In our intestines.
It's very likely. I would say we don't have the smoking gun that it does reproduce, but we have in this one study that was done, when the gut bacteria picked up part of the Roundup Ready gene from soybeans, that gut bacteria was unkillable with Roundup. That suggests that it was continuing to function. Now, if we eat a corn chip that produces the BT toxin, because the gene is designed to produce that toxic protein, if that gene transfers to gut bacteria, we might end up converting our intestinal flora into living pesticide factories.
That sounds lovely.
That has not
Horrible.
Been used in the same sentence with that in the past.
Used in the same sentence what?
Yeah, the fact that it's lovely has not yet been used in the same sentence with converting your intestinal flora to living pesticide factories.
No, it's terrible. well, actually, there was that new study also out of Norway, I believe, that found, you know, even Monsanto says, you know, extreme levels of Monsanto's Roundup was found in soy, and they say extreme levels being 5.6 milligrams per kilogram of plant weight. And they actually found 9 milligrams of Roundup per kilogram. So even, it's like almost double even what Monsanto labels as extreme levels.
Right, so, right, exactly. They say, oh, no, don't worry, you know, don't have to look because there's hardly any Roundup. And as soon as someone looks, it's way beyond the level that Monsanto promised it would never go beyond. And, of course, what they're going to say is, well, that's no problem. You know,
right.
they keep moving the goalpost. First they said, there was a person that testified saying, you'd be more likely getting pregnant from a toilet seat than having a non-GMO crop contaminated by a GMO crop. Now, after millions of contamination episodes, they say, oh, well, it's inevitable, but it doesn't matter. So they keep redefining their science, and it turns out it's all based on a house of cards. It's all based on promises that have turned out to be untrue, and it's being bolstered by a team of scientists and PR people that jump all over, attack, threaten, gag, and get fired, the scientists who are critical of the technology or who discover problems. And they have been very effective at suppressing research, because anyone that does research independently on GMOs, they have trouble getting seeds to do the research, they have trouble getting money, they have trouble getting it published, and if they do publish, they may lose their job.
Right, right. And you hear about that over and over again of, you know, very reputable, wonderful scientists who then get their names trashed through Monsanto's PR people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, what is this when I hear that genetically modified foods are antibiotic resistant? or that they have antibiotic-resistant genes in them. What does that mean?
Well, a few minutes ago we talked about shooting genes into a plate of cells. Now, if you have a million genes in the gene gun and you shoot it into a million cells, you don't really want to clone a million cells into a million plants. In fact, you don't have to because very, very few of those cells actually have the gene that's integrated into their DNA, maybe a handful. So you only want to grow those that have been integrated, that actually have the gene in there. So you have to figure out which of those genes, which of those cells have those genes. So what you do is, in addition to putting the, let's say, the insecticidal gene into the gun, you also put an antibiotic-resistant marker gene. And the purpose of this gene is that once you've shot those genes into the plate of cells, you simply have to add antibiotics into the cells, and it kills almost all of the cells, because that's what they do. The antibiotics kill the cells. But it doesn't kill the very few cells that are now containing that antibiotic-resistant marker gene and that insecticidal gene in one gene construct functioning in the DNA. Because it's functioning, it means it's producing these proteins that protect the cell from the antibiotic. So now when you, so it's only used in that one case just to select for which of those cells got the genes, and then it ends up in the plant, in every cell of the plant, because it becomes cloned, and now you have antibiotic-resistant marker genes in plants on millions of acres. Now, when the FDA was looking at the first potential application of this with the Flavor Saver tomato in 94, they were appalled. They said it would be a serious health hazard to introduce a gene that codes for antibiotic resistance into the intestinal flora of the general population. That's a quote, and it was in all caps. And they were concerned, of course, because the genes might transfer to bacteria inside us or in soil and result in antibiotic-resistant disease bacteria.
Which is what we're finding now, right?
Exactly.
Right. So it became a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, we actually, there hasn't been a single study to see if the antibiotic-resistant marker genes from the crops that we're eating are ending up in our system causing diseases. But they did find the antibiotic-resistant marker genes and other types of genes in rivers in China. So we know that the things get out and they get around, and so we're creating an entirely new set of species. In fact, the EPA did a study and released bacteria that was genetically engineered and found that it traveled 11 miles a year from the center point, and now the bacteria that they released is found on every part of the earth. So once these are released, these genetically engineered organisms in the level of bacteria, or they combine with other bacteria, then they just get out and become practically omnipresent.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're always hearing about the antibiotic-resistant bacteria, you know, that in people now, you know, people who get a bacteria where the antibiotic is not working.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, and I'm just, for now, right now, making that connection that, you know, all the antibiotic resistant genes that we're eating through the GMO foods is, you know, is making us more susceptible, I would think,
to this bacteria.
I
believe it's the case, and I believe that it's of grave concern. The British Medical Association warned up and down about this. Many, many medical organizations have warned about it. But there's other causes as well that are promoting antibiotic-resistant diseases. The overuse of antibiotics in animal feed is the greatest source of antibiotic resistance that many people believe, and the overuse of some of these bacterial soaps and things like that. So we're actually pummeling the bacterial kingdom with opportunities to build resistance, and this was a very serious one. In fact, it was so dangerous, considered by the Division of Anti-Infective Drugs, that the head of that division sent his memo that his division created to another head of a division and said, you have to read this consult. We come down squarely against the use of antibiotic-resistant marker genes, and he was completely adamant that this shouldn't happen. And they were overruled completely, and they were told, don't worry, genes are destroyed during the digestive process in the stomach. Gene transfer is not possible. But in 2004, in that study we talked about earlier, the only human feeding study on commercialized GMOs found that it did transfer. Yeah,
right,
exactly.
Right. Oy, what a mess, huh? What a mess.
Well, we're cleaning it up. The thing is this. Today is a very auspicious day. Yesterday, in Vermont, the House and Senate passed the first state labeling bill. So on
Wait, backtrack a minute. I know that the Senate had passed it, so now the House has passed it?
The House passed it yesterday around
12:30. Oh, great, I missed that.
Yay. Yeah, yeah, 12:30 Eastern time. In fact, as soon as I'm off with you, I'm going to be setting up a Skype call with some friends of mine who are the senator and member of representative in Vermont. I met them in 2003, the first time I did work on GMOs in that state. It's very exciting. It's going to the governor to sign. I don't know when it's going to be signed or if it's been signed yet, but that he's expected to sign it. And Connecticut has already passed a labeling bill, but the Connecticut
bill they have strings attached, right?
Yes, the trigger clause. And that means that they wouldn't enact the bill until at least four other states, including a contiguous state with a minimum of total 20 million people, have passed the same bill. And that way they didn't want to go it alone. Now, Vermont is going it alone, and they're ready to face a lawsuit against Monsanto, which is very, very bold of that state. I think we should all, like, stand up and have not a moment of silence, but a moment of cheering today.
Applauding, right?
Applauding for Vermont, because 93% of Americans want GMOs labeled. 64 countries have labeling requirements, and right now, the FDA, because they mandate to promote biotechnology, they ignore 9 out of 10 Americans who want labeling to support the economic interests of 5 GMO companies. So it is completely a disaster at the level of Washington, and we just hope that the FDA is not going to come in and say, oh, we're going to preempt Vermont's rights and Connecticut's rights and all of our states' rights because we want a national labeling bill, not a patchwork of regulations, and then they'll just sit on it forever.
Yeah, but a national labeling bill that allows them to do it voluntarily.
Yeah, that's what the Grocery Manufacturers Association wants. They want to say that there's absolutely no requirements for them to do anything different. They can continue to sneak their GMOs into the food and not tell anyone. And if they want to tell them, they can. And that they have a voluntary labeling program right now. Now, fortunately, so many people are avoiding GMOs. 39% of Americans say they're trying to avoid or reduce GMOs, that the non-GMO label has become extremely valuable, especially in the natural products industry. In fact, when you have a non-GMO project verified seal, according to Whole Foods president last year, it increased sales by 15% to 30%. So we've seen a tipping point in the natural products industry where everyone is trying to get their products verified. You figure that there's about 25,000 products that have either been verified or are on the way to be verified through the non-GMO project. Now we have test cases in supermarkets like Safeway and Walmart, etc. We have the original Post grape nuts, the original Cheerios. Smart Balance will be non-GMO soon. The Target home brands will be non-GMO this year, Ben & Jerry's this year, even Chipotle's restaurant chain will be non-GMO this year. So we're going to see that, and the food companies, most importantly, are going to see that the non-GMO trend is not firewalled behind the natural products industry, but that these companies that boldly proclaim on the front of their package non-GMO will increase sales. And that will tell everyone else in the industry they better become non-GMO before their competitor does, and we're going to see a scramble, a tipping point in the United States, which will be very similar to the thing that happened in Europe in 1999, when virtually every food company committed to stop using GM ingredients in Europe because the people there had been informed by a firestorm of press and headlines about GM safety that we never got here on this side of the ocean.
Right. Right, that's the thing that infuriates me is that all of this was done behind closed doors without the public's knowledge. I mean, you know, people think, well, I never cared about those before, why now? And they don't realize how it changed in the last 30 years and that it wasn't really an issue before that. Anyway,
exactly.
Jeffrey, before we go on anymore, I want to take a couple-minute break. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the movement to, you know, pass this in New York State. So don't go anywhere. Everyone, I'm speaking with Jeffrey Smith, the author of Seeds of Deception and film Genetic Roulette about the dangers of genetically modified foods. And you're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Jeffrey Smith, author of Seeds of Deception and the film Genetic Roulette, and an expert in the dangers of genetically modified foods. Jeffrey, you with me?
Yes, I am.
Great. So we talked about the wonderful passing of the bill up in Vermont. And we also mentioned that Connecticut has passed a bill, but it's contingent on states like New York and Rhode Island and Massachusetts passing similar bills. Where is New York State at? I know we have some bills that are stuck in, you know, that are being stuck in the Consumer Relations Department right now or something like that.
Yeah, I think there has a Assembly Bill 3525 and Senate 3835. Good news is that Assemblyman David Buchwald yesterday pledged his support for the bill that would allow it to advance out of committee and inch towards the vote in the Assembly. He's a Democrat in White Plains. In fact, I grew up in Westchester, so I'm happy to hear that he's voting in favor of right to know what's in our food.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good. So what do you suggest people can do to help move that along, some of our listeners here?
I would say get onto the website gmofreeny.net, gmofreeny.net. There's a petition, and then look around on that site to see if there's people you can get in touch with, things that you can do. I know that there are groups all over who are involved in this. Some of the co-sponsors are Food and Water Watch, Sierra Club Atlantic, Catskill Mountain Keeper, Green Party of New York, the Brooklyn Food Coalition, Consumers Union, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of support there, and there's a lot of opportunities for people to plug in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my feeling about this is that when they do, it's good to use the opportunity to tell people about the real dangers of GMOs and the way that the approvals were manipulated through political collusion and industry manipulation and revolving door, et cetera. Because I think that the opportunity here is to ride on the wave of politics, which gives a higher profile to the issue, but that we want to win not only in the legislature, but also in the supermarket cash register, so that we drive GMOs out from a tipping point at the same time, which might be needed in order to block the FDA's eventual move to preempt states' rights if that does happen.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you believe right now there's enough genetically modified free crops being grown to meet the need that is going to be created as we transition to GMO-free foods? Or how long is that going to take?
It's not available enough for food and feed today. The vast majority of the acreage is for animal feed, and that's going to take a few years. We have a master plan at the Institute for Responsible Technology of a five-year transition from GM currently to non-GM food within a year or two or three to non-GM feed within 5 years, both through primarily a tipping point, consumer education, and some research. So people can go to responsibletechnology.org and sign up for our free newsletter, and we'll keep people informed about what they can do in their local area and around the country, and also information that they can send to others, post on their Facebook, etc., which is critical. In fact, we find that the information about the health dangers, like the movie Genetic Roulette, and that, by the way, is being picked up by PBS stations around the country, so we can also let you know when it's playing at a PBS station in your area. We can let people know how they can help inform others. We also have a Tipping Point Network, which is more than 100 groups around the country, close to 10,000 activists. We have a speaker training program. We've taught close to 1,000 people, and I'll be doing another speaker training online course soon. And we have a lot of online resources available at responsibletechnology.org. And another website, as long as I'm at it, is nongmoshoppingguide.com. There we have 16,500 products that are verified as non-GMO, and we have an iPhone application with the same information. It's free, called Shop No GMO. So nongmoshoppingguide.com or Shop No GMO.
Mm-hmm. Now, if people are committed to buying organic food, is it automatically genetically modified free, or is there contamination happening?
Well, contamination will happen whether it's organic or non-GMO project verified. If it contains an at-risk ingredients, there's a risk of contamination. Now, organic is not allowed to intentionally have GMOs used at any stage, but there's no required testing to verify, and there's no threshold above which it will become uncertified. The non-GMO project does require testing, and so you'll see the gold standard would really be the organic seal and the non-GMO project verified seal on the same package, because then you get all the other benefits of organic, plus you know it's been tested for contamination if there's at-risk ingredients. But if you are absolutely desperate to not have any genetically engineered molecules in your mouth, then if it contains corn or soy, then you may want to avoid it no matter what. But in our institute, we do recommend that buying organic and buying products that say non-GMO, those that are listed in the shopping guide, are three of the four ways to avoid GMOs, the fourth being just avoid the at-risk ingredients. And we list them all on the shopping guide, including the names of the derivatives of soy and corn.
Mm-hmm. Well, when they passed the law so that sugar beets can also now be genetically modified, is regular table sugar made from sugar beets, or that's made from sugar
more
cane?
Than between 50% and 60% of the sugar is the component of that sugar is sugar beet sugar, unless it says pure cane sugar. So if you buy something that says pure cane sugar, it does not contain sugar beet sugar. But if you have something that just says sugar, or if a sugar is the ingredient in one of your products that you buy, then expect that it is mostly from the genetically engineered sugar beets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, people just don't think, you know, it says vegetable oil. You know, you think vegetable oil, well, that's soy, that's corn, that's all genetically modified. And,
yeah,
you know, soy lecithin or vegetable protein, all those things are without doubt genetically modified, and they're in everything.
Yeah, and it comes from Europe. I mean, if you buy Belgian chocolate, they don't have GM soy lecithin over there. So in that case, but if it's from North America and it doesn't say organic or non-GMO, if it has a derivative of soy, it's going to be GMO.
Right, right. Now, can you explain, I mean, to me it's somewhat obvious, but can you explain why it's so critical for children, especially, to avoid genetically modified foods?
Well, children are most at risk for a number of reasons. They are very sensitive to toxins, and also pregnant women are particularly important to avoid GMOs, because when certain toxins are introduced during certain phases of pregnancy, that can have long-term repercussions, even on the offspring of the offspring with our new understanding of epigenetics. Children are more sensitive for allergies, and so the number of kids with allergies is much more than the number of adults. Children eat more food per size, and so they're constantly pulling in a lot of food, and the food is used to build their body, not just for energy. So if there's a nutritional problem in the food, then that can show up in terms of the structure and function of their body. They also have a weak blood-brain barrier, and they don't have a strong gut bacteria built up. So there's a lot of technical things that could go wrong just based on where they're not yet at in terms of a fully developed nervous system. So it's well known that children are most at risk, and it's a tragedy that the infant formula that's being sold in the United States is genetically engineered. It contains genetically engineered corn derivatives, sometimes milk, sometimes soy, and there's very few options that don't have it. There is some organic varieties. Same with some of the baby foods, that having them contain GMOs is just a tragedy.
It is. I agree. There's a big global march going on May 24th. Can you tell people about that, the Global March Against Monsanto?
Yes, March Against Monsanto. You just have to go online and enter it in Facebook and Google, and you will find a march near you. This was a self-organized Facebook post, actually, last year around this time. Someone just put up a "Let's March Against Monsanto," and they expected a few thousand people. They got more than 2 million people in 53 countries. This tells you how powerful this movement is when a little Facebook post can create such powerful on-the-street action. Monsanto has been voted as the most hated corporation on the planet year after year after year. And their stated goal is to genetically engineer 100% of all commercial seeds in the world and patent them. And this is basically replacing nature, eliminating the products of the billions of years of evolution. And their consultant worked backwards from that goal of replacing nature to create the strategy and tactics to achieve that.
They also put into their seeds the Terminator gene.
Not yet. They actually want to do that. The Terminator technology is a technology where their seeds would be sterile and could not be replanted.
Right.
That has been struck down by international agreement as absolutely horrific. Monsanto's goal is to target the 1.4 billion farmers that save seed every year, eliminate their ability to save seed, forcing them to buy just the seeds in the catalog, and that process will decimate our food security by eliminating all the biodiversity. Right now, at a time of global climate change, we need a diverse food supply so that the seeds that will survive under different types of weather conditions are there. But the amount of biodiversity loss we've already found in the last 100 years will be nothing compared to what would happen if Terminator technology were deployed, forcing farmers not to save seed, but to just go to the Monsantos of the world. In fact, Monsanto is the biggest seed company just by going on a buying spree 20 years ago and picking up huge numbers of seed companies all over the world.
Mm. Well, I'm actually glad to hear that. I thought the Terminator gene was already being put into these genetically modified foods, so that that was already happening.
Well, what happens now is the farmers sign a contract that legally prohibits them from saving seeds and then allows Monsanto's investigators to go in and trespass and sue and threaten,
right,
and intimidate.
Right. And it was really funny. I read somewhere where they were saying Monsanto's never sued a farmer. I forget where I read that, but I was like, are they kidding? You know, you hear about these lawsuits all over the place. So, but we're just about out of time. I could talk and talk forever with you. You know, you such a wealth of knowledge, and, you know, I thank you so much for all the work that you've done and bringing this genetically modified food issue into the forefront. I really, you know, think you have done a great job with that, and I thank you so much on behalf of all the eaters on the planet. Thanks. Keep up the work.
My pleasure. Thank you. Safe eating.
Thank you. Everyone, you've been listening to Jeffrey Smith on the Progressive Radio Network with Bhavani at IE Green. See you next week. Have a great rest of the week. Bye for now.